Welcome to the Club 555 podcast show. I'm your host, Jonathan Clark, and this is the Club 555 podcast show, where business owners get tips, inside trade secrets and techniques that give you an advantage, an almost unfair advantage, in business networking and how to get more clients through warm referral. Can you handle more business? Welcome to Club 555 podcast show. We're called Club 555 because we meet at 5:55 in the evening for business networking to find out a little bit about who our members are, what kind of people they can help, and how we can help them get more clients. We then have a sit-down meal where the real networking takes place and everybody ultimately benefits. So, over the next 20 minutes, I'm going to be interviewing lovely Sheena Doyle. How are you, Sheena?
I'm very well, thanks, Jonathan.
Jolly good. We've had a good chat already today. We should have recorded the original chat. But now we're going to get more specific about HR and all the many things that you've encountered over the years. How long have you been in the HR world?
Too long. 30 years, over 30 years, yes.
Fantastic. So you've learned a heck of a lot.
I have, yes.
About the maybe the softer side of business or the human element of it.
Absolutely,
the emotional and personal side of it.
Yeah.
So let's start off with something that's nothing to do with that. Let's talk about, initially, just to get this thing going. Tell me something about you that has nothing to do with your work.
Well, I guess I am one of these unusual women that has a huge passion for football. Not playing it, sadly, but watching it. And I originally come from Yorkshire, and my passion is my team, Leeds United. And so I take every opportunity to get down there and watch them. And I have to say, I've aged about 20 years following this season, but hopefully the next one will be better.
I've seen many a Facebook photo of you in a stadium somewhere. So yeah, you're absolutely a football fan. I love it, love it, love it. So let's talk about HR. How did you get into the world of HR, and how did you start your own business?
Yep, absolutely. Well, starting in HR actually didn't come immediately after education. Usual story, you're guided down a road at school, this is what you would be good at, and I ended up in the world of accountancy. Decided, no, this isn't for me because there's not enough people involvement. I come from Yorkshire, so I do like to talk, and so I explored other options, and that's where I kind of went into training and development initially. And then by default, was working within the HR department, and that really started my journey, you know, as I say, 30 years ago in HR, and that was in a retail environment originally.
Okay, so to be in the same field for 30 years, assuming that you still enjoy it,
I do.
What is it about it that you enjoy with human resources? What do you enjoy about it?
I just like people, and I like their quirks. I like the curveballs that dealing with human beings throws at you. And I like to help people. I like to help people and support people. And when I was in the corporate world, obviously one of the, I guess, the prime focus was to make sure that you could get the best from your people, and that comes from what I believe is creating a great employee experience for them, because then they'll do the best for you, they'll do the best for your clients, and hopefully it's a win-win situation then.
Okay, so it's about the employees enjoying their work, enjoying the environment they're in,
yeah,
and being treated well, and therefore wanting to deliver good service as a result.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. So you went from corporate to running your own business.
I did.
What inspired that, and how easy was it to transition?
I think the driving force behind it was that I was getting really frustrated about the image that my profession was getting. There's a big emphasis on process, transactions, and we're dealing with people. The clue's in the title, it's human resources. And it just felt that in a lot of the really big organisations, a human element was getting lost. And I thought, if I can go into a different area where I can help smaller, medium-sized businesses to actually recognise the value of creating this great employee experience at an early stage, then longer term we'll have bigger businesses that actually do focus on this and do add value to their own businesses by creating a great place to work.
So what spurred the use of launching your own business in it? Did you get bored? Were you fed up? Did you hanker for freedom?
Yeah, I think I wanted to be able to share my views and beliefs of what an HR professional should be providing to a business. So I guess letting go of the shackles, the corporate shackles of where, you know, to a certain degree, you can push back, you can challenge, but in the bigger organisations, ultimately, if it's not what they want to do, then it won't happen. And so you can get quite frustrated. I've worked for some fantastic businesses where they completely get it, and therefore the value that HR can add to the business is fantastic because they get it. But the element of businesses that you work for that don't can mean that you did about that challenge day in, day out. And I just thought, if I can bring that into the world of the SMEs, then that maybe will actually help them and help me to, you know, enjoy what I'm doing.
Okay, so give us an idea of the kind of clients that you're working with or you like working with.
Okay, I like working with clients, as I mentioned earlier there, that understand the value of investing in their people.
They get it.
In various ways, and they get it. And the clients that I've got vary in size. So I have clients who have come to me and said, I'm thinking about being an employer for the first time. I want to do this right, and therefore I'd like you to help me do that. And I actually like that because you know that they get it, and even though it's a first employee, they want to get it right, which is great. You then get the growing businesses who have maybe been focused on all sorts of other things but not necessarily on their people, and they suddenly realise that there is a bit of catching up to do. They do want to get it right, but they have maybe along the road focused on other things because they've been growing very, very quickly. So an example of that might be that they've had to hire people in a very short space of time and maybe not invested as much time as possible. And what I like to do to help clients is to ensure that they're hiring employees, not just somebody that can do the job. Because what I have seen in the last 2 years, that a lot of small businesses who do make a wrong hire get all sorts of problems on the back of that because the behaviours are not right. They can do the job, but how they're interacting within can create all sorts of other problems which can damage a small business.
So I've always looked at there's who the person is and there's what the person can do. There's a famous story about Nordstrom department stores in the States. Spent a lot of time recruiting people, and they came to a conclusion, which was you have to recruit nice people and then train them because you can't train people to be nice.
Completely.
You agree with that?
I've always found that
the skill set is something you can train in, but maybe the attitude or the personality or the people skills is something different.
That's true? Much more difficult. And I think if you can establish that at recruitment stage to help that person to embed in your business much quicker because they are the right fit. And where I've seen that in the corporate world work well is where a collaborative approach to recruitment. So yes, you will do your interview to establish that they can do the job, they've got the skills to do the job. But then if you've got a team of people, no matter how small, involve the process, invite the candidate back in for a coffee, a chat, and let them just have a conversation with them and get their feedback.
From the people they're actually working with.
Yeah, because they will be very honest. And I've seen that work, you know, in much bigger businesses, and it's particularly, I think, successful in businesses that are, you know, business B2C, dealing with customers directly, where the employee is going to be customer-facing, because if you can check the behaviours in that environment, and the chances are that they're going to work well and interact well with your customer.
That's a good idea, I love it. Okay, so what kind of industries have you worked with previously? Who do you experience with?
A number of different industries, but predominantly retail, hospitality and financial services. So the retail side of it started many, many years ago. As I said earlier, coming from Leeds, I was a management trainee for Asda in their head office, and that's where I kind of got my love for retail, and still do, actually. And I guess the opportunities to work in that sector I always relish. Worked for a number of businesses in retail, Boots, House of Fraser, Starbucks, and then moved into financial and worked with some of the large corporates, but also some of the smaller growing financial services businesses, where they absolutely want to be different in terms of the employee offering and want to go down the road of, let's make this a great place to work.
That's quite a CV. On differentiation, that's a great point you've mentioned here. What makes, there's lots of HR people out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people who do it from an outsourced point of view, freelancers, etc. Mm-hmm. So why should I be hiring you and not somebody else?
I think where my real passion lies around HR, the workplace needs to be employee-centric to a certain degree. Obviously, there is always a need for some process. There's always the need for some parameters. People like parameters. So, you know, you do need to have those processes there. But ultimately, it is about understanding how you can create that great place to work. And so it is about making it fun, but making it a place where they can learn, they can grow, where there's a career path, where they feel valued, and focusing on that. And focusing on the positive, proactive side of HR. Going back to an earlier point I mentioned, the frustration I felt sometimes in corporate was focused on the negative side of it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when people ask me what I do and I tell them, they quite often go, oh, so you just sack people, you make them redundant, you discipline them. And it's interesting what the perception is. But actually, yeah, there may well be some need to do that and support small businesses with that, absolutely. But if you can focus on creating that great place to work, focus on retaining your great employees and give them a career path, there'll be far less of the negativity and far less of the disciplinaries to deal with, and you can then invest in being a proactive employer and you'll keep your best people, because retention is always a problem in businesses. You know, you invest lots of money in training them, but then you need to keep them. And focusing on that proactive side of it and having somebody to help you do that will mean you'll have far less of the negative side. And I tend to rarely mention tribunals. Sometimes, you know, a business model that's used in the HR consultancy world. Yes, I'm going to help you stay away from that, but it is more about prevention than actually you get to that point and then we need to see what we can do to sort it out. We want to stay well away from the employment tribunal because it's not a great place to be at all.
Absolutely. Okay, so is there a danger or is there a perception then that HR is not an essential? It's a bolt-on, it's a luxury, or it's only something you bring in when things get bad enough?
You make a really good point there, Jonathan, actually. That is very true, and that is one of the challenges, I think. Particularly in the SME market, where people will say, I need my accountant, I need somebody to do marketing for me. But the HR piece on that first shopping list at all. So you will find that people will call you when they've got a problem. And that problem has maybe grown arms and legs. Whereas if they had engaged with you earlier in the journey, then you maybe wouldn't have had such a big problem. Mm-hmm. And so it is about, I guess, educating small businesses to say that it's well worth taking away some of the headaches that you've got by having some kind of expertise around that at an early point in time, along with the other people that you automatically engage with. So yes, I think, you know, that is a challenge that you do find.
I think a lot of businesses have that, where there's an education gap and the client maybe doesn't see the need.
Mm-hmm.
As such, and part of your, not scaremonger, not terrorise people, because I see a lot of that, but to make people aware Sometimes you need to be quite kind of forceful about it or blunt about it, but don't have to, you know, kind of usually.
Yeah.
But I think there's probably going to be a curve where you have to help people understand that this is something they should be getting involved in, and maybe an early start if
yes.
it's a new business or they've got new yeah. employees for the first time. So what methods have been the most successful for you in terms of getting clients? Because this frequent struggle for mm-hmm. the freelancer or the one-woman band or one-man band mm-hmm. is, how do I actually get clients? So what have you found has worked for you?
Networking has certainly worked for me. It has. And I think, isn't it a very early stage as well, that you need patience. You don't go to a networking event to, you know, to sell directly into someone's face. It doesn't work. And I think my background wouldn't, you know, that I wouldn't have been comfortable doing that anyway. But I think initially I thought, you know, I don't have a sales background. How am I going to handle this? But I very quickly began to realise that, you know, some of the strengths that I've got in terms of building relationships, that's exactly what you need. And it's about giving people the time to know, like, and trust you. And then you do maybe do some work for somebody. And then what's happened with me is referred on then to other clients from existing clients, which is a great way,
yep.
you know, to get clients is if you've been recommended. But definitely for me, the networking has definitely worked. But you have to be patient and you have to keep going and not have the attitude that you get 2 or 3 clients, then you stop going. Mm-hmm. You have to keep going mm-hmm. and you have to keep building those relationships.
Absolutely. I think the nature of your work is I think trades guys have it slightly easier because everybody understands what an electrician does and everybody needs one at some point, so they
yeah.
but when you've got a service, a professional service that has that involves maybe a bit of education
mm-hmm.
And there's a kind of intimacy to it because
yeah.
you're letting someone into your business, which means they're going to see warts and all,
yeah,
that relationship has to be there to warrant that introduction.
Absolutely, yeah.
And networking is a long-term commitment,
yeah.
as we've talked about many times on these podcasts, and we'll,
yeah.
and we'll talk about it, no doubt, again. excellent. Okay, so how would I spot a good prospect for you when I'm out and about, talk to some of our clients, and also the guys listening to this right now, how do we identify a good client? What would we see that would tell us an introduction for Sheena, or what would I hear? What kind of buzzwords would I hear people talking about?
I think what you might hear is anxiety around, you know, being an employer. They attach a lot of stress and anxiety to that. An earlier point where they don't always automatically recognise that there is expertise out there that can help them with that, just in the same way as they will, you know, outsource other mm-hmm. professional services. So it's listening for those pain points, I think, those anxieties or those scenarios where people will quite often tell you, you know, they've got this incident going on at work and they're not quite know how to handle it. You know, it's around their people.
Give me some examples.
So quite often it will be the behavioural stuff. That's quite often what I've found that I've heard. So, you know, somebody will... I'm not quite sure how to handle this because they actually do a good job, but it's how they're doing it that's causing the problem. So how do I deal with that? I don't know how to deal with that because it's not tangible. I can't just say, you've made a mistake, you know, let's see how we can help you correct that. It's how do you deal with those behavioural issues? And that's where I think the HR skill set comes in, because that is part of the skill set, that you are able to support those uncomfortable conversations and, you know, sometimes actually have those conversations for a client, but also coach them how to do any additional ones they have to do, so that you're not continually hand-holding, but you're adding value and they're increasing their skill set in that fear away, because the worst thing, sweep the problem under the carpet, because it won't, and that's when you may well get issues further down the line. And who's to say at that point, you know, you reach a situation where you are touching the outskirts of a tribunal and some way that you don't want to be. So I think it is listening for those pain points.
What are some of those behaviours? What would I hear specifically?
Something as serious as bullying sometimes you do hear, but people don't quite know how to tackle it. So you have a team of, you know, a very small team, say of half a dozen, and there's a you know, quite a large personality, and amongst that it's becoming a bit too controlling, or, you know, the behaviours are those that the rest of the team don't want to be there. So that's a huge risk. So those kind of problems do need to be dealt with sensitively, but they need to be dealt with, because the risk is there that the difficult employee stays and the good ones don't. Mm-hmm. And then you've got an even bigger problem. So yes, absolutely, it's looking for those signs.
So that's it for this episode of the Club 555 podcast show. If you subscribe, you can get access to all of the episodes as they're released. So thank you for listening. Please do share this show with your friends, associates, business associates, or anyone else you know who would like to listen to what real life business owners are doing day to day out there in the business world. If you have any comments or questions, then get in touch and we'll answer you personally. This is Jonathan Clark from the Club 555 podcast show. Go out there and get networking. We'll be right back.